Welcome in, Lineup Logic. Another episode of The Sweet Spot. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. With me, Alex Rimaszewski. How we doing, Alex?
I'm good. I think we need to push The Sweet Spot a little more than we normally do, because I want people to start knowing us as The Sweet Spot, because I think that's a great name.
We need that brand recognition. Maybe get Sean to hook up some t-shirts or something.
Lineup Logic Sweet Spot, and I think we need a logo too.
We get a little creative with that, perhaps a little risque.
Yeah, I was saying that, I kind of said the
same thing. All right, but last week was an interesting tournament at the Heritage. Notable tidbit that on Sunday, the winning round was not shown due to television conflicts and advertising and whatever the hell they have going. And I mean, that's just ridiculous that you can't figure out a way to, one, get that taken care of earlier in the week, and two, like, just find an alternative source to stream it, to, you know, put it online, give it to Golf Channel. Like, there's platforms for it. So that's a really big fail by CBS there.
Yeah, I don't know. Did it have something to do with, I was very busy all weekend, but did it have something to do with the early tee times on Sunday?
Yeah, I think that kind of screwed things up, but like, I don't know, you're playing in South Carolina. Like, check the weather when you're planning your golf programming. It was showers on Sunday. The whole week was the forecast. It's like, for our job is to get people excited about golf. And, you know, if guys were tuning in on Sunday to see, like, oh, let me see how these guys are doing. I got Siwoo Kim. I want to see if he can close this out.
Yeah.
And then can't find it. Like, they don't want to watch golf anymore.
You compare this to any other sporting event that would happen at, like, I mean, it's a Sunday during the day. Like, you have some, half of the year you're going to have, like, I guess football, whatever, show the football, that's fine. Then the basketball, like these day games, like they're always going to be on TV. They're going to, I don't know. It's two days a week.
Call Golf Channel, like call Golf Channel and say, hey, you guys want to stream this? Give us $10. Like, it's, whatever you bring in is better than just letting the tournament die. And, you know, I'm sure you had to return a lot of ad revenue. I'm sure RBC, who, it's the RBC Heritage, like, I'm sure they're not happy. They just lost, you know, the main portion of
what was Golf Channel even showing at noon on 10 a.m. on the East Coast on Sunday morning.
I'm sure it was like Masters highlights or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I had the TV on Monday, and they were just playing replays of last week's tournament. So it's like, I mean, half the week you turn on the Golf Channel and it's either old stuff or like something you just don't care about at all. So you'd think maybe they could, you know, I think they could figure it out if they put their mind to it a little bit.
Yep. But yeah, some good golf was played, some interesting names coming in at the top there. I went from Sunday hurt me a little bit. I went from being in the positive to being in the negative a little bit. It was one of those weeks where I think a lot of my lineups just had one missed cut and just short of the cash lines. You know, I foolishly went in on Luke Donald in my cash lineup. Just, you know, I had the salary and I thought, you know what, I don't want to be exposed if he does what he usually does here. So for, you know, 7,700, I'll take him. And, you know, he missed the cut. And that was when we were on the show. It's, we both said, like, hey, happy to fade Luke Donald. If he does it, great. If he doesn't, then, you know, it's a nice leg up on the field. And got a little in my own head there. So.
Yeah, Luke Donald was like, after the first day, I was I was full fade on Luke Donald. And after the first day, I was like, all right, there we go. Perfect. And he started doing, I guess, what one would expect him to do, seeing his course history. And he came up one stroke short. I think he was like 5 under or something, or 4 under on Friday. And I was actually, I mean, I was telling everybody I just need Luke Donald and someone else to miss the cut. And, Ollie, who ended up making the cut, but then I think he went like 3 over on Saturday. I've pretty much been basing my last 2 weeks off of one single tournament, the King of the Course on DraftKings, which is like awesome to be in and so much fun to follow, but it's like so stressful because it's only four.
Yeah, you moved on, right?
I moved on. Yeah. Yeah. I finished at the top actually, which was crazy because I had a missed cut, but that's the cool thing about having only 4 people in there. And it's
right,
like
small field.
I feel like I'm jinxed for this week, though, because I think me and the 2 out of the 4 that are playing again this week are the only ones that are shooting for their second first place so far. And I don't even know how long this is going to go on. So I'm just like trying to play every qualifier I can and just stay in it.
Right.
It's an awesome source of cash one way or another. But finished up 2 out of 4 and boom, you move on. So it's exciting. And I had a missed cut, but I had Luke List in there. Luke List did just enough for me. And I think that is really like what made the difference.
Yeah. You've definitely been on fire lately. Yeah. So keep that up, man. I think as a whole, the stuff's where it needs to be. The cheat sheet has been rocking for the last several weeks. I think what we talked about on the show has been nice. So if you're listening and you're not subscribing to the Patreon tier, get over there to patreon.com/lineuplogic, get to the $20 tier, get the golf content you need to be where you're at. And you know, the one place I'm finding a lot of success is over on draft.com. And I know I've been bringing it up a lot lately, and I want to push it because I think guys can really get an edge if they're listening to the show, if they've got the cheat sheet. We threw rankings on there last week for it. Just quick overview of it in case you aren't sure what I'm talking about. Draft.com, it's a DFS site, but you do a snake draft in either like a 2, 3, 4, 6, 8 person league. So, you know, if you want to own Matt Kuchar, you're the only one who owns Matt Kuchar. If you get him, you know, with the first pick, whatever it might be. And, you know, that's nice because you don't have to worry about ownership. You just figure out who the good golfers are. And that's what we do every week. So that kept me in the positive with what I lost over on DK. So definitely check that out. Another platform I wanted to point out real quick is fantasydraft.com. Their deal is you pick 7 golfers and use your best 6. So if you keep finding yourself with one missed cut, you might want to think about playing over there. They've got some decent contests. They got everything you're used to seeing on DK or FanDuel. And you know, I'm personally not the biggest fan of FanDuel's golf product. So it's worth expanding your horizons. Get a little deposit bonus at a new site. You can hook one of us up if you know, I'll post my link in there, Alex, if you have one, do the same. You know, we get some brownie points for referrals. So
yeah, I mean, I love I have not yet been on draft fantasy, geez, the snake draft one.
Draft.com.
I feel like draft.com. Yeah, see, I need to get into that. I just love the, on a week like this where we are going to throw out our favorite plays of the week, I think what we're going to be talking about is going to be based off so much off price, but there's a lot of guys here that I think can be successful, but do you want to pay 11-4 on DraftKings for Matt Kuchar, right. 12,000 right. for Sergio. And I think it's so cool yep. that like you can actually just rank the players where you think they could be. And with the amount of like number deep diving and stats and analysis that we do, I think you have like an instant like 20 legs up on half of the field here, like of anybody yeah, you're going to be playing.
They're super quick. They're fun. You got like a 30-second clock. So like when you sit down for it, you need to have your rankings in there. You need to be ready to go, especially if it's a head-to-head because like you're going to be sandwiching picks. But, you know, even the biggest drafts are over in like less than 5 minutes. You know, you just hammer out a handful of them, you know, as much as you feel like putting in play. And then, you know, over 10 lineups, 15 lineups, if you're playing dollar games, like you're going to have an edge for sure. You know, last week I got Siwoo Kim with my last pick so many times. He was a guy I was coming around on more and more towards the end of the week. And yeah, he really buoyed a lot of my lineups.
Oh yeah. I could only imagine.
Yeah. So let's go over this week. We've got the, Valero Texas Open. You want to tell us a little bit about the course, what we're dealing with, a little bit different than what we've been seeing lately.
Yeah, so we've got the Valero Texas Open at TPC San Antonio, also known as AT&T Oaks, apparently. It is a little over 7,435 yards. It's par 72. So we got some par fives cooking again. This tournament has been around for a very, very, very long time. They've been playing it at TPC San Antonio in Texas since 2010. It's a longer course, over 7,400 yards. So I know we've been kind of going back and forth, actually. Jumping back and forth for probably the past month or so. It's kind of like long course, we're looking for bombers off the tee. Short course, we're looking for the accurate guys. And this is going back to a little bit of both here. It's a more traditional golf course than what we've been seeing, but it is very tight. There's not very much water. But once again, we have tree-lined fairways. A couple notes taken right from the course's website. First of all, it's a Greg Norman design, and something we have to note this week is that it is co-designed, or the designing consultant is Sergio Garcia, the most notable name in this week's field. So he actually hasn't played here competitively since the debut of the tournament at this course in 2010. So that is something to take into consideration. I'll just read this quick. Traditional design that balances narrower tree-lined fairways with wider fairways offering multiple routes, i.e. strategic options to the green. So I thought that was actually pretty interesting because normally we're thinking, all right, are we looking for dudes who can crush the ball off the tee, or are we looking for your average distance, strategic placement in the fairway, and then accurate approach type player? And it's interesting because I think you can kind of go either way here. And if you look at past winners, past runner-ups, people who have fared well in this tournament in the past, it's a little bit all over the place. You've got Kevin Chappell last year, Charlie Hoffman the prior year, Jimmy Walker. And we're really just all over the place. And then you runner up, we got Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed, Jordan Spieth. So like Brooks is a bomber. Charlie Hoffman hits the ball a long way. But then you got Jimmy Walker, not so much. Jordan Spieth, he hits the ball, but he's always been kind of more of putting focus, at least in 2015 when he was runner up. That's I could almost tell you for sure that's what won him or brought right. him to where he finished in that tournament. So you got to look like at a few different things this week.
It's an interesting, you know, you're trying to think through it. And what I kind of, the conclusion I came to is I think for guys that I'm just looking as, you know, cut makers, I want accurate players. I don't want guys who are going to be risking, you know, a double bogey, a triple bogey, because if you don't take your medicine on this course, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble. So there's definitely some guys who might have an issue with that.
Going off that, the cut for people who ask every single week, which we know they do, top 70 and ties, like always, it's a huge field again this week. The way we know this is a difficult course, the cut line has been plus one. The range of cuts have been plus one to plus five since 2000, or over the past 5 years, with an outlier of plus seven in 2015. So another thing worth noting is wind in Texas is a very big factor. So someone who can pretty much work through the wind and keep the ball in the fairway, whether it's low, whether it's just accurate, or you're really crushing the ball, you don't want guys who are going to get too wild in the wind. And then if you're going to be missing greens, if the winds are really kicking up, strokes gained around the green, I think that's pretty big. So short game. It was actually interesting when I was building the model this week, I looked into the usual tee to green approach. I always put putting in there because I know a lot of people don't think putting belongs in a model like this, but I just don't agree with that. I mean, putting is like where tournaments are won. So if someone is putting great over the last 12 rounds, like you want to ride that player because they're going to win on the greens. So I always leave that in. But I actually put strokes gained off the tee, which is normally a distance metric. And then I included fairways gained in addition to that, which is more of an accuracy metric with actually hitting the ball in the fairway. So it's a little combo of those two. And then I threw in some par five scoring since we are back to having more par fives in the past couple weeks. And then taking into consideration that some of these approach shots are going to be 150, 175, 200 or more. So that's kind of what I based a lot of my numbers off of this week.
Yeah. And the par fives are really long from what I've seen it's not many people are going to get there in two.
Yeah. You're not going to be seeing very many eagles this week. So I think normally I'll look at birdies gained or birdie or better percentage. And this week I chose to look at bogeys avoided instead of that.
All right, so let's jump into the pricing here. You got Sergio, like you said, he's the most expensive golfer, really the only big name at this tournament. He's 12,000 on DraftKings. That's Dustin Johnson level pricing. Normally in this situation, I would say like you have to almost go heavy on Sergio. Coming off of the debacle at the Masters, I'm not sure how to feel about it. It was only on one hole that really, you know, was the meltdown, but like, it's still scary.
I know it really is tough. And I think people seeing Sergio at 12,000, I think they're probably going to want to. My gut instinct was to stay away from him. But you look at him and then you look at the rest of the field and you're like, what? And then you add in the factor that he co-designed this course. And you're like, it's so hard not to have a piece of him.
Right.
But the thing is, I like so many people from like the low nines into the mid sevens here that if you can like build a lineup and find a guy down low, you can include him. But I don't think it's totally necessary.
Right. Yeah. You're not getting anybody over 8,500 in there with Sergio unless you really dumpster dive. And it's just not a week for that. I agree. I think a lot of people are thinking the same thing on Sergio. You know, there's his ownership probably would have been 30% coming into this tournament if he hadn't had the 13 at the Masters on that one hole. The other thing, though, working, I think, to keep his ownership down is you got Luke List right there at 10K. He's the bottom of this tier, playing really well right now. He's a huge hitter. I think a lot of people are going to say, you know, why go Sergio at 12 when I can go Luke List at 10?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Luke List has I loved playing Luke List a lot more when he was kind of more quietly good. And now he just keeps doing his thing and not winning, but providing immense value on daily fantasy play. So I agree with you, especially just the fact that like people think Luke List, they think long ball, they see 7,400 yards or long course. And I think they're going to be really, really looking toward him. But with that said, you got a couple guys above him, like Charlie Hoffman. Charlie Hoffman has had like crazy history on this course. Yeah. And also I feel like this is like the Charlie Hoffman season where like just before Masters to a little after Masters where he really, really like comes into form, and then you start trusting him a little too much, and then he just ruins your hopes and dreams towards the end of the season. So it is interesting. Like, I am very tempted, like, kind of with this whole price range. There's Sergio, you got Matt Kuchar, Charlie Hoffman, Ryan Moore, Luke List. So that's the 10K plus here. I think Luke List is probably going to be the chalk of the group, just one, because he's the lowest of the five, two, because of what he's been doing. And then I guess my guess would be Charlie Hoffman comes next because of his – he came in third here.
Miners are going to dig that one up.
Yeah, yeah. Like his past 5 years here have been third, tied in third, tied in 11th, tied in 11th, first, and then T40. He's gained more strokes on the field, I think, than anyone that we're seeing this week at this course. So he's definitely enticing, but like 10-9 Charlie Hoffman, an 11-4 Matt Kuchar, a 10-2 Ryan Moore, and even a 10,000 Luke List is just like a lot to swallow, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're not used to seeing these guys with five digits and their pricing. Yeah,
exactly. Like if you had to take, I'll say, two of these guys ranked 1 to 2, Luke List and up, who would you go with?
I think it's got to be Sergio. I think Cooch is running out of gas. He's played a lot. He kind of faded on Sunday last week. You know, the weather might have had something to do with it, but you know, he's running on empty. Ryan Moore is tough to trust. Charlie Hoffman, I'm a fan of Charlie Hoffman. Loved what he did at the Masters. But to be the third most expensive golfer, that's just not him, even with the tournament history. So, yeah, Luke List, even, you know, with the chalk. I think with Luke, you either need to this week lean into him really heavy or fade him and cross your fingers.
Yeah, I like that. I agree. Like, I don't want to stop playing Luke List here just because I think other people are going to be back on him. But I totally agree with the Matt Kuchar call. He's been doing what he normally does, but it's like just not very impressive. And his price went up so much, and his past couple years here have been even more mediocre than his recent play. He just hasn't impressed me nearly enough to keep trying to play him here. Plus, he's got weeks and weeks and weeks that he's just been going. Charlie Hoffman has played the Masters. He played last week and now. But his course history kind of – I just feel like Charlie Hoffman is a guy that, like he finds his courses and he knows where he's good and he capitalizes. And that's what makes me interested in him quite a bit. Do you by chance know Dustin Johnson? Do you know where he was owned last week, percentage wise? I'm flying through contests on DraftKings right now, and I can't find anyone who actually played him. It's always hard to kind of go back. Because I think in this situation, like Sergio Garcia is – In the low 20s?
Low 20s across the board in GPPs. All
right. So, see, I could see Sergio being in a similar situation to that this week, because I think people see Sergio Garcia, Matt Kuchar, Charlie Hoffman, Ryan Moore, and I think a lot more people are going to go, well, I mean, Sergio is Sergio. Like, you don't even need to, like, consider what he did at the Masters. That might, what, maybe drag his ownership down a little bit.
Yeah.
So he's going to be 18 to 22% owned. So,
yeah, I'd say around 20.
I don't know.
I'm okay with
that. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. You can go either way on Sergio. I'm probably going to be fading Matt Kuchar. I'm probably going to be fading Ryan Moore just strictly because of his price. And I'm more interested in a little bit of Hoffman and a little bit of List here.
All right, let's jump down to the nines. We only got four golfers here. You know, I'm not an Adam Scott guy. You can't trust him. He struggles with putting way too much. But in this field, if I'm ever going to play him, this is a week to think about it.
Yeah. So I haven't played Adam Scott DFS wise in so long, and I think I'm gonna keep away from him. I've heard some chatter, some Adam Scott chatter lately, and I don't trust the guy. Like I was talking about it earlier, you got to putt to win, and like he's been such an awful putter for so long. Like I know he's starting to come around a little bit in terms of that, but for me, I think you go down into the eights and even a couple of the guys right below him. And I think I would rather take a chance on a few other people here.
All right. I'm kind of in the same boat. Yeah, I'm probably going to put him in a lineup where I build a GPP with none of the top guys to maybe catch some lightning in a bottle. What are your feelings on Chapel coming, you know, off of two missed cuts, but having won here before?
I actually have him highlighted. I bolded his name very, very early on in my looking at this tournament coming up. And originally I thought, all right, I mean, look at what this guy has done on this course and look at where he's priced. And the fact that he's coming off of a miscut last week only makes me want to play him more. However, I've kind of heard his name mentioned a few too many times.
Yeah.
And that is kind of like leading me away from him. I think I'm going to have a piece of Kevin Chapel, and I think that piece of Kevin Chapel, my lineups will probably start with Kevin Chapel. I think I'll probably start at a 9,300 Kevin Chapel, who is the defending champion, and he finished T4 the previous year. He likes this course. I think we all know that he is a very good player who has happened to miss the cut the past 2 weeks. The Masters, I just like, I don't even know. He was priced so low, which was very interesting. So he definitely garnered quite a bit of interest. And then people decided to say, I figured he was going to be very chalky. He wasn't all that chalky, but then he missed the cut. And I was very happy about that. But I think I'm ready to like get on him in this spot, simply because it's the miscuts, I think, are drawing me towards him the most, as weird as that is. I feel like people also don't like playing defending champions, which is also interesting. Yeah. He's gained strokes here. Obviously, he won last year, and he's Kevin Chapel. And I think a few of these names we're about to talk about are going to maybe pull people elsewhere. So I don't know. Do you have any type of ownership projection on Kevin Chapel?
He's looking as one of the higher tags. you know, it's like a top 10 tags, but nothing crazy. So he'll be owned. He's a decent price. I don't think it'll be anything crazy, like upper teens, maybe 20. My thought on Chapel is if you're going to go over and play on draft.com, that's a great place to own a guy like this where, you know, if Chapel's low owned, he's a good play. If he's chalky, he's a bad play on DraftKings or FanDuel. On draft, you don't have to worry about that. Just put him in the right spot in your rankings. So I'll probably get my exposure to him over there and leave him out of my lineups on DraftKings.
Yeah. I think I agree. I think that is definitely someplace that he could definitely benefit you. I would like to check into ownership a little later on, but at this point, I'm tempted to have a piece of him. I mean, last week he's been improving. He's actually so he shot 73 in the first round and then 70 in the second round. I think he just barely missed the cut, which I know isn't saying much, but for 9,300 compared to some of these names that are above him, like he's coming first and fourth in the past 2 years. And then they're pricing Matt Kuchar, who's coming 40th and 42nd and really not done much at 11-4. Like, I think that's insane. But the two missed cuts in a row following like a talks of a back injury that we don't even know is really affecting him anymore. I guess that's what drags his price down. So, I mean, I'm definitely, he's going to be on my list. Yeah. We'll see how.
And how then much real quick, I wanted to see if you had any interest in Billy Horschel. He came out guns blazing at the RBC. He said after the Masters, you know, he got cut at the Masters and he spent some time there after the cut, just, you know, working on his swing. And he said he thinks he found something. And he posted the three rounds under 70 at the Heritage. So he definitely found something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's someone you could probably get at pretty good ownership too.
Yeah, for sure. He's not
like 9,100, like,
right.
Talk about a price increase. But again, just like Kevin Chapel, like he, three of the past 5 years, he's finished top four at this tournament, a T4, a third, and a T3. So like, but then he's been cut in 17 and 14. So it's another toss up that I would gravitate towards Kevin Chapel over Billy Horschel, but I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Would you play him on DraftKings?
Yeah, I think he's a good guy to put in a tournament lineup where you're looking to keep ownership down or to offset ownership of a guy like List or, you know, maybe Kuchar if you're dying to play Kuchar. I think Kuchar will be popular. So jumping down into the eights, there's some good names in here. It's the bulk of the solid players. Why don't you take us through that, Alex?
All right. So the eights is definitely, I think, where I'm going to be focusing, putting most of my energy this week. Like I said, up top, I think there's definitely a strategy that I wouldn't be mad with possibly starting with a Luke List, starting with a Kevin Chapel. That would be 10,000, 9,300. The eights are where things get interesting, I think. The first player I'm looking at is Brendan Steele, who he's had some pretty good history. I mean, I don't want to say great tournament history after talking about Charlie Hoffman, Kevin Chapel, and Billy Horschel, who have like consistently pretty much finished top 10 here. But Brendan Steele, aside from last year's T62, has finished T13, T8, got cut in 2014, and then T46 in 2013. Brendan Steele is someone I'm actually very interested in because we know he can hit the ball a long way. Pretty much the only recent play we've seen out of him is the Masters where he was cut Let me see what he shot in the Masters. 76-75. That's pretty ugly, but he stats out very well here, and I think he's one of the guys that I'm not afraid to kind of put my eggs in the long ball hitter basket here, especially seeing what he's done on this course. At 8,900, it's like you compare him to Luke List, who hits the ball a mile and historically can't putt for the life of him. Mind you, he's been doing a little better there as of late. I think I would prefer a Brendan Steele there. So that's where we're starting off in this range. Xander's someone who I actually really wanted to talk about. I would love to get Mike's take on Xander Schauffele, who seems to be just every week people want to talk about Xander this, Xander that. Xander won the Tour Championship last year. His course history is nothing. He was cut last year. It was the only time he's played here. He was a rookie. That's fine. I understand that. It's still early in the season. So last year was early in the season. It makes sense. But people just want to keep playing him. And I guess I can't wrap my head around why. Last year, or his recent play is just like, everybody's talking about him last week. He finishes T32. The Masters, which it's another place where I guess I can see someone not necessarily performing the best. We know we were talking about first time players in the Masters. Talked about Brendan Steele quickly. I like Brendan Steele. He hasn't done anything lately. He's barely played. And his course history is good, but not quite as good as a few of the guys we've talked about.
Yeah,
I'm digging him. He hits the ball a long way. What I wanted to talk about and what I actually want to get your take on is Xander Schauffele, who I feel like week after week people are so into. And I can't wrap my head around it. I'm like, he's a second year on tour.
Yeah.
Last year, I understand what he did at the end of the year. I understand that he has all the skills necessary to beat all of these players on a week-to-week basis. We saw him beat the best of the best at the end of last year. However, people keep talking about him, and he keeps finishing 30th or worse and really not doing much of anything, yet he maintains this like mid-to-high range price on these fantasy sites. And especially like this week, he was cut last year, which I said, sure, he was a rookie. It's early in the season. I don't know. I'm not interested.
I think it's the potential he has. People are after it. I like playing him much better when he's in the sevens than the eights. But you know, in a small field like this, people are gonna gravitate towards a name that they've got. You know, a little bit of a. I don't want to say anything profane here, but they've got some irrational attraction to. So I think Schauffele is that kind of guy. I think next year he's going to have a really good year once he's played more of these courses once, twice. But yeah, here he's only got a missed cut.
Yeah, I think he has so much potential. I really do. But I just think at this point in the season, at this point in his career,
yeah, he's raw.
I know after going on this rant about him, he'll probably end up winning this week, which would like, just be crazy to me. I don't know. I'm full fade on him. It's just funny because I just keep hearing his name mentioned like week after week. Even in the Masters, he was like the guy that people were like, oh, if I was going to choose a first time in the Masters, it would be him. And like, I guess you could agree with that, just having to choose a first timer in the Masters. And he was only priced at 7,500 in the Masters on DraftKings. So sure. And then last week he was 7,700. People said the same thing. He started off well, kind of slowed down. He was cut here last year. I guess we can move on. 8,800, in my opinion, is overpriced for him, but I guess we'll see. We'll see how he fares. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch him throughout this season. Maybe I'll have a totally different take on him by August.
But right.
Right now, I'm staying away from him. And I kind of love it right now that people are so interested in him, because if you're going to pay $8,800 for him and he's going to finish 36th this week, like, go ahead, do it, yeah. Please.
Yeah, he's a guy whose pricing hasn't matched the results.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Anybody else you wanted to hit in the eights?
Kind of moving backwards here, but Brandt Snedeker, I'm sticking with him here. Like, I think he was in a very, very small percentage of my lineups that I wasn't paying attention to, because I was only paying attention to one lineup last week. And yeah, he's at 64 in his second round, which is just crazy low, and then he shot 72 on the weekend. I think we're starting to see again like what Brandt Snedeker has been and what he's capable of, and I'm just waiting for it. Like, I think people are waiting for the Luke List win. I'm waiting for the Brandt Snedeker like, oh yeah, moment.
He's gonna be in there on a Sunday sooner or later.
And Brandt Snedeker.
What worries me with Sneds is, like, we keep seeing it. You know, the early rounds are good, and he fades as the tournament goes. I don't know if he's nicked up. You know, he's had some injury issues earlier on this year. So that just worries me. He's played a lot lately too.
Yeah, you know, it's actually interesting. I was looking at the Houston Open a bit, and prior to the RBC Heritage last week, Snedeker played in the Houston Open. So we're back in Texas. He shot a 67 in his first round and then followed that up with a 73-77. So I guess like a trend out of him. He also had a 67 in the Valspar. He's capable of these. He shot 69-67 at the Waste Management and then kind of slowed down a bit, 68 in his final round. I just think he, God, 67 in the Career Builder, 67 in the RSM. He's shot 67 in every single one of his tournaments this year, except for the Honda Classic.
Right.
So I'm just like, we know what he's capable of. He puts four rounds together, and he's going to be a guy you were wishing was in your lineup. He came T25 here in 2016, and that's the only time he's played it in the past 5 years. So I'm not counting him. I would much rather play Brandt Snedeker than Xander this week.
Gotcha.
Jumping down, we're still in the eights here. This is a pretty lengthy price range. So pretty much who we haven't talked about yet consists of Ollie Schneider-Jans, Siwoo Kim, Chesson Hadley, Pat Perez, Ryan Palmer, Jimmy Walker, Bo Hostler, Zach Johnson, and Martin Laird. Immediately, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to cross out Martin Laird. Yes, he won in 2013, but that is now 5 years ago. He is not the same guy that he used to be. Don't quote me on it, but I got to eliminate players. That's my job. So, Ollie Schneider-Jans, another guy people just seem to love. And what has Ollie Schneider-Jans done as of late? He's done even less than Xander, and that is my take on him. He's 8,700. He's gained strokes on the field in his three outings here, but that consists of he had one outing here. In his last five rounds of this season, he's gained strokes overall on the field. He finished T42 with the RBC. Doesn't impress me. He was a major cut sweat for some people. I luckily was not part of that. I was actually hoping for him to go the other way, but he did make it, and then he had a decent third round. Prior to that, he played in the Arnold Palmer Invitational 4 weeks ago. That was a T41, pretty much the same thing, and he finished T49 at the Valspar. Your plus here is that Ollie is an iron guy. He's a low ball guy. He's a guy that can hit the ball through the wind. And I think that's kind of what people keep saying week after week after week. And he's another guy that I just have to like draw the line, and pretty much I don't buy it anymore. It's going to be very interesting with these hard opinions I'm throwing out this week. So I guess you can quote me on Xander and Ollie, two guys that I am a hard fade on right now. If they finish in the top 10, don't blame me. Only you're going to have to blame me, because I'm standing with that. Xander and Ollie, no thank you. That brings us to Siwoo Kim, who is starting to show us what he can do once again. Last week, he pretty much should have won that tournament. He lost it on Sunday. He won it and lost it on Sunday for himself. He was in the playoff. I think his putting is really what did him in. And I don't like to play guys who can't putt. However, with that said, last week, there's only one way you're going to finish in second, and that's with if you take yourself back 1 week from where we are right now. We're talking about the very small greens and the importance of placing the ball throughout the course, placing your approach shots in a spot on the green where you convert. So he clearly did plenty of that to be put at the top of the leaderboard coming down the stretch on Sunday. Siwoo Kim is not a guy that I want to put too much emphasis on recent history. I think we all know what he's capable of, but in a field like this and at a course like this, I think there's a much greater likelihood that you see some random Julian Suri, Russell Knox, someone from this massive field showing up there on Sunday rather than Siwoo Kim, who we've seen kind of making moves lately. So Siwoo Kim, I'm not going to hate on anyone who decides to play him, but at 8,600, he's going to be a fade for me too. So recapping what I've gone through so far in this eight range, Snedeker and Steele are both very appealing to me. Xander, Ollie, Siwoo, not so much. Xander and Ollie, I'm hard no on. Siwoo, a little bit in between. Next one down would be Chesson Hadley, another guy who I am 100% not trusting right now. He actually had a decent week last week, but with that said, he finished T18 at the Shell also, but his short game, his around the green, his lack of accuracy, I don't see it working out here. He's another guy that I'm really not feeling here. I think I'm much more into the low eight region than the previous four people I've talked about here. So Chesson Hadley, he could be interesting to someone who really wants to focus on recent form. He's been in form for his past two tournaments, if you want to call it that. However, we've seen how truly inconsistent he is. For the names around him and for this price, like, I'm not playing Chesson Hadley at 85. He was in the sixes consistently at the beginning of this season, and that was when I was playing him. And if he was squeaking by making cuts, I was happy. If he was at a price where I would be happy with a squeaked by made cut, then I would play him. But at 8,500, he's a no. Pat Perez, Ryan Palmer, Jimmy Walker, all great options, in my opinion. They've all gained strokes at this tournament over the past 5 years. Pat Perez has the least history of these three players over the past 5 years at this tournament. He hasn't played the last 2 years, but in 2015 and 2014, he finished T20 and T11. If I had to cut one person out of this group, Pat Perez would be that guy. I am very into both Ryan Palmer and Jimmy Walker this week at 8,300 and 8,200. They have gained over 30 strokes apiece on the field at this tournament in the past 5 years. Both of them clearly like the course. Ryan Palmer, I think, is going to be the low option of the two. He just barely made the cut last week, which is, I guess, a little scary in a way. Jimmy Walker, I've been on since the Masters, and I'm ready to stick with him. All right, so Pat Perez, Ryan Palmer, Jimmy Walker. This is my trio I'm talking about right now. Choose two of the three. I'd go with Ryan Palmer, Jimmy Walker. Pat Perez seems to be a bit of a snooze fest lately, but has had good luck at this course. And he's Pat Perez at 8,400 with Chesson Hadley priced above him.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting that, price for Perez.
That turns my head.
This is where you usually see him, you know, maybe even a hair higher. So when everybody's getting a bump, he's getting nothing. So a little bit of interest on that front, but more of a GPP interest. He's just like, he's never in shape. I just see him like pounding cheeseburgers in between rounds. Like, he's even admitted.
He did an interview. His interview, I'm not going to start working out. I'm going to continue drinking and I'm going to continue myself.
He is awesome at golf. He's one of the top 100 people in the world at playing golf, but he doesn't do the things the other guys do to, you know, take care of their body. And, you know, that makes me question some of his other work ethic, things like that. So, you know, I wouldn't touch him in a cash lineup because of the risk he brings with him.
Yeah. Yeah. At the price, though, I can see you throwing him into a GPP lineup. I think course history is something that people do look a lot at. But I think there's something to be said about that with both Ryan Palmer and Jimmy Walker, who have had a ton of success here. Jimmy Walker won in 2015, and Ryan Palmer has finished top 10 the past 3 years, top 15 the past 4 out of 5 years. So we haven't seen a ton of any of these guys lately. I think Jimmy Walker is like very, very quietly coming back into form, which is why I kind of love him here. And then Ryan Palmer next, followed by Pat Perez in that little trio there. To recap you on what I just went over, pretty much Xander, Ollie, Siwoo, Hadley. I'm fine with fading every single one of them. If I had to play one, I don't even know. I'm not going to play any of them. I guess it would be Siwoo just because he did fine here last year and he's coming off of a couple good weeks, but I'm not interested.
Yeah, I got some interest in Siwoo again.
Yeah. If he's low owned, I mean, I guess it's worth a shot, but I'm not drawn to him.
Yeah, Hadley, yeah, he's whatever. Who was the other name?
Ollie,
yeah. Again, he kind of falls into the Schauffele camp for me. Like, me people too. Want him to be better than he is right now.
Yeah, people just love those two guys, and I think they're just absurdly overpriced at 88 and 87, and I think people are going to keep playing them, to be honest. And I don't doubt that one of them is going to like have a week here soon enough, but I'm not putting money on it.
Yep. Did you talk about Streelman at all?
No. So I stopped with Jimmy Walker at 82. If you're ready to jump down below into the eights and or the sevens.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll start it off with Kevin Streelman. I mean, we say it every week. He's your the foundation of your cash lineup. Like he doesn't miss cuts very often, hardly ever. Sometimes he's just a boring golfer, but like last week, he had a great weekend, tied for seventh. He's won a tournament this year. It's he's got it going.
Yeah, I'm back on Kevin Streelman here for sure. I'm taking my previous stance of Streelman cash. You can even throw him in a GPP at 7,700 with
yeah,
like
for sure.
I think people are getting like a little for the beginning of the season, and even taking last season into consideration, he was really like the cash guy. He doesn't miss cuts. Play him if you want a top 40 or whatever to fill in the low spot of your GPP. It's safe. He's got upside, but I think he's back to where I want him to be. However, I think people have some suspicion. He had a couple not so great tournaments. So I think that's going to drag his ownership down. And 7,700 is kind of the price here that you're looking at this price range. And it's like from 7,200 to 7,700 is like 30 guys. It's like huge. So I think Kevin Streelman could get kind of like lost in the crowd there. And I think he's a very good play. Zach Johnson is a guy that I would kind of throw in a similar category with more upside. I mean, most people know that I'm a Zach Johnson guy. He's kind of like Brant Snedeker to me. I want to just keep playing him. But he keeps making cuts. Like last week, he slowed down on the weekend, which was unfortunate. But he's played here 4 years in a row. He missed the cut last year. But prior to that, he came T29, T20, T6. And he has a win here, correct? Did he win here? Am I making that up right now?
No, I'm just seeing the sixth. He's got a sixth is the best I see.
All right. That might be true. For some reason, I thought he had actually won here. But not since 2010. So, whatever. I'm still like at 8,000 on DraftKings. I definitely do like him. I like him over Martin Laird. Keegan Bradley is very interesting. But then I would probably jump down to Streelman. And I think one other person I would point out above 7,600 would be Jamie Lovemark, who I've heard some chatter about. And it makes sense. He's been playing well. He hasn't missed a cut in a while. He finished T16 at the Valspar, T41 at the API, T24 at the Shell. And now he's coming back here where he's at least played decent.
The model liked him too, right?
The model liked him. Yes. I think he might be... I think he'll garner some ownership, but again, like I said, I think this is a pretty stacked range from like the 75 to like high eights that like, I don't think anyone's going to be like too crazy high owned that you need to really think about staying away from them.
I think he's going to be the highest of the group. People seem to be on him, which is a little surprising because there's no like glaring thing that says, play Jamie Lovemark.
Yeah. I mean, like looking at the model, a couple numbers I'll shout out quickly. Over his last 24 rounds, he's second in the field scrambling, which I think is going to be important here if you're pretty much if you ever find yourself outside of the fairway / green. And sixth in the field strokes gained tee to green and eighth in the field strokes gained approach. So I think his putting is definitely questionable. Find himself middle of the tee and then strokes gained off the tee is also questionable. So, and fairways. So, I mean, if he's going to be able to hit some decent shots off the tee, I think, I don't know, like you're talking off the tee and then putting, that those are definitely two big question marks in my book, but it sounds like he's good at getting into trouble and then getting himself out of trouble. If you're looking at what I'm looking at.
All right, who else you got?
Do you have any... Talk about Keegan Bradley for a minute.
Yeah, so I think Keegs is a pretty accurate golfer. He's one of those guys that can be hard to get right. You're never really sure where he's going to end up. His price is just, 7,900. I would have thought at least high eights for him. He hasn't had the best year, so that's got a lot to do with it. So yeah, who else in the sevens do you like there?
All right. Jamie Lovemark and Kevin Streelman really kind of headline the top of the sevens for me, dropping down a couple people that stood out to me early on were, I guess, number one, Chris Kirk, who seems to pop up in models for me week after week, which is kind of interesting. I mean, he has good finishes now and then, but it's like he's a pretty risky player week to week, but he's played well here. And 7,500 is like kind of like the top of where I consider Chris Kirk. Like, if he was priced any higher than 7,500, I would definitely be asking myself, why is he a thing right now? So he finished T13 here in 2015 and T8 in 2016, and then T8 in 2015, but he missed the cut last year. Stat-wise, he's really standing out from the field. So I think he's an interesting GPP play. Like, you know, Chris Kirk at 7,500 is not going over 10% owned.
Right. Yeah, it was, he had a mixed bag this week. So I don't think anybody's going to be too keen on him.
Yeah. What do you have any thoughts on Julian Suri?
Suri's been hit and miss this year. He's more of an accurate golfer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's these certain people who play on the European Tour who, like, names start popping up in these smaller PGA Tour events or, like, the not-so-stacked PGA Tour fields that are like, oh, well, you put Julian Suri into this field and, like, where does he rank up against this crowd? And I think it is actually something to, like, really think about, because you could definitely gain an edge on people if you have this information. He, like, we've gotten to see him a couple times, and overall he's fared pretty well. Like, he's one of the more interesting, like, if you're just looking at his game log on DraftKings, it's kind of interesting to look at, because he's made 9 cuts in his 14 starts, but he also has 5 top tens. So over half of his made cuts result in top tens.
Yeah.
And one of those
was the Houston Open. That's just where I was going to go. They're not that similar of a course, but I think guys who did well at the Houston have a good shot to do well here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's Texas, and I remember sitting here talking about the wind with you then, and playing through the wind, I think, is going to be a big thing. Like, we don't know exactly where the wind's going to be blowing or how hard, but playing in wind, anyone who's played golf knows that, like, everyone always says, like, you can play in the rain, you can play in the cold, you can play in any conditions, but wind is the number one thing that can just make things, like, just completely different. And he's showed promise here. I don't know. It's 7,600. It's hard to say, having, like, never played here, but coming off of an 8th place finish with a 66 and a 67, 69, 73 in the Houston Open.
Yeah, he's buried there, I think, in the team. So there's definitely some ownership to be gained there.
Yes, people are definitely going to get buried in this high 7 range, low 8 range, that I think if you're really into any of these players, you should not be afraid to go throw them into a GPP lineup. Like, I actually passed over Martin Laird. I said I wasn't that interested in him. I look over at the model, and he is ranking out actually very high there. So it's actually a really, really interesting, like, chunk of players here. We've got multiple in in the top like 25 of our models sitting right in front of me. So I think you look into a few people here, Keegan Bradley, like you said, could definitely make noise. You never know with him. Jamie Lovemark, Kevin Streelman, Julian Suri. I think there's a lot of options here.
Do you like John Hewitt all?
I what was I looking at earlier that made me want to play him? Has he just had? Yeah, I mean he's played here the past 5 years and he's only been caught once. What's his recent?
A little bit of a mixed bag. We had some good rounds at the Heritage.
Where he's priced, he's definitely someone like Jason Kokrak. I talk about him every week and I'm like so into him all the time. And now that I want to be off of him, it makes me look for those around.
Yeah. Same thing with Kokrak as it was last week. You know, it's only GPPs. He's a big hitter. So that plays to the course a little bit, but I worry about accuracy. It's, you know, if he gets punished for being in the trees or behind a rock or something, you know, it could get ugly fast.
Yeah, and looking at our model, he's 125th in the field over his past 24 rounds, strokes gained putting, and 117th strokes gained short game. So I think it's safe to say that is his hiccup there. He's ninth stroke gain tee to green. So I think that right there is ninth in the field over his last 24 rounds, strokes gained tee to green. That means he's going to make the cut. Those other two stats, putting and around the green, that's what you got to look out for. Right. And that is what could lead to pretty much being a cut sweat on Friday, yep. Like seemingly every single time I play.
We should start calling it the Kokrak sweats.
Honestly, I think maybe if I keep suggesting or recommending him.
So, all right, any other names in this tier?
I'm leaning towards fading him. No one, especially. I think Harris English might garner some attention. I'm not all that into him, but yeah, really love Mark Streelman, Kirk, and then a little bit of Suri. And that's kind of what I'm focusing my attention on at this exact moment.
All right, so I'll jump in, do some ownership here, and then you can hit pricing. Yeah, Luke List, like we talked about, huge number of tags, like 25% more than the next nearest person, which is Xander Schauffele. Both of those guys make for an okay fade. I mean, you know, Luke List is hot, but it's not like he's never face planted before in a tournament. Here's a surprising one. Abraham Anser. Any feeling on him?
I actually had him on my below 7,000 list, which consists of pretty much just him at this moment. And I was actually kind of pissed because, you know, I listen around and read around, and I did hear a bit about Abraham Anser, and I've been on him in weeks past, some of these smaller fields that, like, purely judging off of just his recent form, like 20th at the Farmers, 16th at the Valspar, 13th at Punta Cana. Where I was heavy on him, and I think I was trying to go extremely light that week because it was during the Dell match play. And I set three lineups, and I think I had one person missing the cut in each lineup, but I had to have Anser in two of those lineups. He continues to do well, and like this is a Abraham Anser type field. Right, like And
yeah, he's got a lot of missed cuts, but
a little bit of experience.
Those are in fields with 20 more guys that are missing this week.
Yeah, yeah. Like at Punta Cana, he was 7,900. And the week before that, he was 7,200. He finished 16th and 13th. And then at Houston, he went down to 6,800 even after those couple finishes and finished in eighth. Gotcha. So,
all right.
I mean, he shot no higher than a 73 in his past three tournaments. So I'm into it. But not if he's that chalky.
Chalky 6,900 is always a risky proposition.
Yeah, exactly. All right,
so then Charlie Hoffman next on the list, not surprisingly, with the tournament history. Adam Scott, he's done well here, and he plays well in these dry conditions, being Australian. Jamie Lovemark, yeah. So another situation where I like him, but 7,700 and chalky gives me a little bit of a worry. Keith Mitchell, I think a similar situation to answer there, playing on some lesser-known tours. Brendan Steele, Sergio Kuchar, some of the big names you expect to be in the top 10. Jimmy Walker, Kevin Chappell, not surprising with either of those two. Everybody else is kind of falling into the middle tier there after that, so... Just a couple of those surprising names that are playing on web.com or other tours. And then Lovemark, a little bit surprising to me how high he is with not any one single thing sticking out. So definitely hit me up in Slack if you are trying to get some ownership projections. I'll have better stuff on Wednesday. All right, so then Alex, go ahead with some pricing discrepancies.
Yeah, so it was actually very interesting in terms of pricing this week between FanDuel and DraftKings. Normally, it's a pretty even split. I know technically if I find someone that's higher priced on DraftKings, it means there's got to be some guys down there lower. But a lot of DraftKings favored options that stood out to me here. Brant Snedeker, this one wasn't huge, but I think when you're getting up top, you're really the difference between a few spots can make a pretty large difference. So Brant Snedeker is 11.5 on FanDuel. He's 9,000 on DraftKings. That is the fourth top option on FanDuel and the 10th top priced option on DraftKings. So that would favor him on DraftKings. Zach Johnson is 10.7 on FanDuel, 8,000 on DraftKings. That's 7th top on FanDuel and 19th on DraftKings, favoring him on DraftKings. A few others, someone I'm not all that interested in is Bill Haas, who is priced strangely high on FanDuel. He's 10.6 on FanDuel, 7.6 on DraftKings. That's the 8th top priced option on FanDuel and 27th on DraftKings. So favors him on DraftKings. Jamie Lovemark, a little more reason to play him on DraftKings, maybe despite his chalkiness. He's 10,000 on FanDuel, 7,700 on DraftKings. That's 14th top on FanDuel, 24th on DraftKings. And one last DraftKings option would be Scott Piercy, who I did actually take a bit of a look at here. I don't hate him this week. He's 9,800 on FanDuel, 7,400 on DraftKings. That's 15th top on FanDuel, 35th on DraftKings. Obviously favored on DraftKings there. Two of them for FanDuel. Kevin Na, who I think we all know how I feel about Kevin Na. But, you know, the guy pops every once in a while. It's like every 3 weeks. He's like top 10.
All or none
it's
with like, him.
I don't know. Exactly. It's like you don't know if he's actually going to play in the tournament, but if he does, there's like a 50% chance of him being in the running on Sunday. So he's 8,600 on FanDuel, 7,800 on DraftKings. That's 43rd top on FanDuel and 22nd on DraftKings, favored on FanDuel. And someone who I talked about quite a bit last year who I have learned to stay away from, but over the past couple of weeks, I've noticed this guy can putt on Bermuda greens, which is very strange. Let me look up real quick before I blurt this name out here where he finished last week, because I remember he had a couple. Yeah, okay. So he was playing real good early on, and I obviously did not have a piece of him last week, but this is Wee Kim at 7,100 on FanDuel, 7,000 on DraftKings. That's the 120th top priced option FanDuel and 75th on DraftKings. So he's favored on FanDuel. The guy makes less than half of his cuts, but he can putt on Bermuda. Last week he went 68, 68, 71, 76 to finish in 50th. Had it not been for that 76 in the fourth round, he could have been up there, and he has been up there in the past. So, you know, if he can get the ball to the green and keep draining putts like he always does on these greens, he's
quite a few guys named Kim were having a good week last week. Siwoo Kim, another guy who putts well on Bermuda.
That's a very good point. Siwoo Kim, yeah, we got another Kim in this. Oh yeah, Michael.
All right, Kim, so we're gonna get to our darts in a second here. We decided, though, to start up a one-and-done between ourselves on the show, but then we're also going to open it up to Lineup Logic subscribers. So if you want to be in it, we'll post it in Slack. If you're not on there, really easy to get to. Go to pga.com, go to their fantasy section, and you want to go to the one-and-done, look for the league named Lineup Logic, password is Logic. So for me, my one and done is going to be Luke List. Not worried about him being popular. I want to get him in while he's hot on a course that fits him. So I'm going to jump right in with somebody that I've been on lately.
Yeah, you know, so this is actually very interesting kind of for us starting up one and done at this point, because I know anyone who's been running a one and done for the remainder of the season, you got a lot more to think about being the guys you've already checked off that list. So List, how about that? I think you got a lot to think about here because you've got Sergio clearly surpassing the rest of this field. So if you still have Sergio left, if you haven't played Sergio yet this season, like if you're going to play him in any field, this is going to be it. However, Sergio is Sergio, and he's going to continue to contend in much larger tournaments. So you could definitely save him, or some of you may have already used him. If I had to go with a little more reasonable option, I would probably choose I'm going to say Charlie Hoffman, based purely on his course history. His course history and the timing of this season, where I know he's going to go downhill from here. I'm telling you, this is his peak.
It's the hair and the beard, man. This is the best April. Time of year to have it. Once it starts getting hot, it bogs you down.
Oh, and plus he's got the wind. He's got the Texas wind blowing in those long locks.
Damn it.
So yeah,
Adam Charlie Scott would probably be second on my list. It's a good spot to get him out of the way, you know, in a limited field where he has a shot. And it's not like, you know, somebody's probably coming out of the woodwork to win this one again, like Quintanilla last week. So, you know, you're not risking as much as you would in another tournament. All right, but so for darts, we're gonna do a big hitter, an accurate hitter, and then a comeback. Player. So for me, my big hitter is going to be Ryan Moore.
Yes.
He's more expensive than I'd like, but I think without the water on the course, which he sometimes has a little trouble with, that distance is really going to play nicely for him.
Yeah, I do like that call. I think he is probably a little bit more expensive, but hey, I mean, that's this whole field. Everyone's priced up about, you take what you would expect for their price and add 500 or 600, and that's where you're going to find them. And some other some other players add like 2,000, and that's where you'll find them. So, long hitter wise, I'm going to go with
about him.
Brendan Steele here. He likes the course. He likes the course. He didn't do that great last year, but he's gained a bunch of strokes on the field here at TPC San Antonio. He's been quiet as of late because he just hasn't played that much, but he got off to such a hot start this season that, like, I really think he could go under the radar for where he's priced. Like I said, people love Xander. People love Ollie. Brendan Steele, in my mind, is like a pretty good DFS.
My accurate play is going to be Keegan Bradley. I think he does a little bit of everything well, which usually comes in handy. You know, at this point in his career, he's a little hit and miss, but I think some of his game that he brings with the ball striking is going to be pretty important on a tough course.
All right, accuracy wise, who I have in front of me right now, Jamie Lovemark at 7,700. He's ranking out real well in terms of strokes gained tee to green, strokes gained approach, DraftKings points, which is huge when considering everything we're talking about. And then even scrambling, also very high end in terms of this field over his last 24 rounds. Bogeys avoided, also great. I think he just like sets up real well for this course. If he can keep the ball somewhat around the fairway, there's no water. There's no water he's going to be hitting on. If he can keep it in play and not rack up any penalty strokes here, I think sure. Jamie Lovemark is going to be a good
our miscut player. Comeback player. Going Shubh Sharma. He's missed two straight cuts, so I'm giving you two for here. I don't know why. I just feel like this course reminds me a little bit of I forget the name of where the WGC Mexico was, but you know, kind of a tight course with some length.
Yeah,
and he did real well there. Yep. And then,
yes, the tree lined fairway.
You know, I think people played him a little bit coming off of that, and with the miscuts, they got bit. So you're going to get some ownership discount on him for sure.
Yeah, I actually really like that play, and I like a little thought about the WGC Mexico there. That was a very, very tight course. Yep. Like you're 5 yards off of the fairway there, you're in the trees. I just picture images of Phil Mickelson punching out of the trees somehow onto the green at the 5 feet away from the hole. So I miss Phil. I wish he was in this field. He'd probably be priced at 11,900. comeback player, I'm going to go with Kevin Chappell here. It's another twofer. He's coming off of a couple miscuts, but the course history speaks for itself here. He's Kevin Chappell. We know what he's capable of. In comparison to some of this field, he's priced very well. He's in my book, I'd play him over Adam Scott. I'd play him over Ryan Moore, Matt Kuchar this week. So at 9,300, Kevin Chappell, despite his past two miscuts, I hope that just kind of chips away at that ownership. I'm into for sure. Kevin Chappell.
Good favorite. Stuff, Alex. So as always, hit us on Twitter, hit us in Slack. I'm at @Roto_1. Alex is at @DonaldRemington. And ask us specific questions. Let us know what site you're playing on. Our guy Tom from Down Under is got some some interesting roster considerations. He needed 9 golfers, so kind of looking forward to seeing that that list with this field.
Me too. That was awesome. Let me just say, I hear that he was like, shit, I had an Adam Hadwin. I had 100% Adam Hadwin. And I was like, God damn it. Like, how do you do that? And then he's like, oh, well, I'm like in Australia.
Set your alarm for 1 a.m. to check the tee times.
Yeah, exactly. But really, yeah, like reach out to us. I do a ton of work pretty much from like now being Tuesday night all through Wednesday. So I'm only going to.
Yeah, that is a good point, Alex. Now, you know, we don't so
reach out.
We don't do the pod and then just drop our lineups in. It's a process where we continue researching, continue reading. I know myself, I particularly avoid other people's work so that I'm not subconsciously plagiarizing them. So, you know, after we lay this down, I start to reach out into the world again and see what other people are thinking. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm a podcast guy, but I writing my article on Mondays, I like to go and do it totally fresh, 100% me, but I do a lot on Wednesdays. So like,
that's what we got tonight, guys. Good luck and get cashing.
Yes. Good luck this week and win some money.